I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Tom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Yesterday I had a chance to fill in on a national show, and Alan Dershowitz was a special guest talking about his new book, refuting those in a brilliant manner about all this impeachment talk, treason talk, and where this leads. And we did talk about President Trump's actions yesterday in the summit. I started off talking with him, though, about the fact that Dershowitz now is under fire and places like, he told me he's speaking tonight at Martha's Vineyard, the annual public library, and what that's going to be like. And he took shots, and I did too, at on college campuses, professors and students who just want to shut everything down, don't want to hear an argument, like it's ridiculous to be talking impeachment and treason and things of that nature about President Trump, even if you oppose his policies, which is fine. And this new book and the persona of Alan Dershowitz really, really gets people nuts on the other side, on the left. He's one of the most effective advocates out there. They can't stand it that his bona fides, he voted for Hillary Clinton, yet he supports President Trump in the Supreme Court nominee, and in his actions, or at least says this is political witchcraft to say these are treasonous or even impeachable. Here's what I talked about with Professor Alan Dershowitz on his new book.
I guess some of this is your ongoing struggle, the years that I've talked with you, particularly on places like college campuses, where it's not just difference of opinion, but I don't know, but it's even worse. It's not criminalizing, but it's making certain ideas hateful. That's what happens on college campuses. If you differ, they're hateful. In the political circle, if you differ with some of these things, it's criminalized or it's impeachable.
Right. And of course, it's the professors who are at fault. One of the leaders of the campaign against me on Martha's Vineyard is a professor at MIT who thinks he knows the truth with a capital T. And he's actually written books about, why do you have to have different points of view? Wouldn't it be better if everybody just got the news that fit their worldview? And he's teaching students, and the students are beginning to reject the marketplace of ideas, the free open discussion of speech. And it's terrible what's going on campus, because it tells us what America will be like 20, 30 years from now when these kids are our leaders and they have no appreciation for due process. If somebody is accused of something, oh, they must be guilty. And if somebody wants to express a view which is politically incorrect, oh, he must be a fascist or a Nazi. Why do we have to listen to that? And the ACLU is part of the problem now, not part of the solution. The ACLU has now said, well, we have to think carefully about, do we want to defend speech that offends other people? You know, I was on the national board of the ACLU.
Right.
We defended Nazis, communists. We defended Richard Nixon. We defended everybody. Today, you have to be politically correct. You have to pass a purity test if you want the ACLU
now,
to
let me take you to an example today. I don't know how you felt, but I'm watching this all day. It's my job and my passion. And I thought the president was wrong to throw the intelligence community under the bus. I think he kowtowed way too much past the good cop stuff with Putin. But guys like Brennan calling this treason and throwing words around like that, these are elevated men who are supposed to be more careful in what they do to oppose someone like Trump.
Look, I think it was wrong for President Trump to go against the intelligence community. I don't think anybody should have any doubt that Russian intelligence tried to influence the election. Whether they did or not, reasonable people could disagree. But they surely tried to. And, you know, but the idea that calling that treason is defined in the Constitution. It's specific. And it's, you know, raising arms against the government. Look, when President Thomas Jefferson didn't like Aaron Burr, he charged him with treason. And he called witnesses into his own office. And he said, if you testify against this guy, I'll give you immunity and a pardon. If you don't, we're going to throw you in jail. And, of course, Aaron Burr was ultimately acquitted. But, you know, treason is defined very narrowly in the Constitution. It's really bearing arms It's you know, joining the other side. It's being a spy for the other side. It's being Benedict Arnold.
And Professor, just something occurred to me to ask you that, too, because I see the theory of the book, the subtext of this is, and I may have been guilty of it. I admit to it in the heat of talk radio. We all say unfortunate things. You talk all day like I do. And, you know, it seemed to me that treason, we've gotten to a point in the consensus seems to be it's just a political thing. If Democrats take over, they can impeach a president. And I agree that shouldn't be. Wanted to ask you, though, would you consider yourself an originalist when it comes to the Constitution? Because some of the things you're saying are trying to bring us back to the actual words and intent rather than expanding it because of the whims of the day, the passions of the day.
It's a great question. So I am an originalist when it comes to most of the Constitution.
Okay.
When most of the Constitution are phrases and terms that you can't quarrel with. You have to be 35 to be president. You can be the greatest person in the world. If you're 34, you can't be president. You serve during good behavior for a judge. You can be 107. You can still serve. You can't change those parts of the Constitution. But then you have phrases like due process, equal protection, cruel and unusual punishment. Those are phrases that cry out for some kind of an interpretation. And even the originalists, people like John Marshall, said, it is a constitution we are expounding. And in order to make the Constitution last forever, we have to look at, like, the Fourth Amendment and say, how does it apply to GPS tracking? The framers had no idea there'd be GPS tracking. So you have to interpret the Constitution. But you don't. But the impeachment provision, which I write about in my book, The Case Against Impeaching Trump, it requires two-thirds of a vote of the Senate. It can't reduce it to 60%. It's two-thirds. And it says you have to be convicted after a trial in the Senate of treason, and which is defined in the Constitution, bribery or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Those are all crimes. You can't just say, we don't like this guy, or he didn't behave well in Russia, or he committed treason-like conduct. That's not good enough. It has to be treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. And if it's not that, you can't impeach him no matter how bad he is. And I would make the same argument no matter who was president. So that part of the Constitution is dead. Other parts of the Constitution, you might say, are living. And so I am an originalist when it comes to most of the Constitution. You look at what the framers, you look at what the people mm-hmm. who ratified the Constitution, what they meant by these terms. And they rejected the British approach to you can get rid of a prime minister, you can get rid of even a king if the parliament thinks he's committing maladministration. That was introduced. And the framers said, no, we don't want maladministration to be the criteria because that makes the president subordinate to Congress, and we don't want that. So they put in the four criteria, treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors, and we have to stick to those terms. Yes, I'm an originalist when it comes to that.
One other point from your book, we're talking with Professor Alan Dershowitz, The Case Against Impeaching Trump. What else would you point to in the book? You turned this around in record time. I mean, there's some funny stuff here. The emails in which they call you under the pay of President Trump and a Republican authoritarian figure, my goodness.
Yeah, no, the emails I get, you would not believe the emails.
Oh,
by the way, all of the people who are opposing me on Martha's Vineyard, they all have one thing in common. They're all virulently anti-Israel. They hate the nation state of the Jewish people. And that's the first letter I got saying why somebody would never talk to me again was because I supported Trump's decision to move the Israeli embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Yes, I proudly supported that decision. I'm proudly pro-Israel. I'm critical of some of its policies, as I'm critical of some of America's policies. But that's one of the things that really offends the hard left, if you're pro-Israel. And, you know, in the book, I go through all the issues relating to impeachment. It's a very short book. It's only 150 pages. You can read it in a couple of hours. And you can, you know, get it on Amazon. You can get a signed copy. It's probably worth a little less than the unsigned copy.
Well, if I ever head to Martha's Vineyard, I'm going to get a giant. And you've done 37 books in 36 years.
Yeah.
I read that somewhere. Wow.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, since I met my wife. I met my wife in 1982. And since 1982, I've done 37 books. And I've finished my 38th book. I'm just finishing up editing it, and I'll send it in. I try to do a book a year. I love to write. It gives me the greatest pleasure. It also makes me very controversial.
I got to tell you, back in our collective memory banks, you were good enough a book that I'm working on about people like you and the moment and teacher that changed their life. And you told me about you were just chasing girls and basketball, the great Alan Dershowitz in school, at some moment that changed your life.
Yeah. No, look, I was so lucky. I had a couple of great teachers that really turned me around. In fact, on Wednesday night on Martha's Vineyard, I was speaking at the library. Every year I speak at the library.
Oh, boy.
I was educated in the library.
Yeah.
And for me, free libraries has been the essence of America. And I sure hope our president doesn't cut out funding for libraries, because libraries, if you're a kid and you have parents like I did who weren't educated, didn't go to college and had no money, like my parents had no money, it's the free public library that is the great equalizer. I could read the same books the kid who went to Harvard read and could be just as smart as he or she is. So to me, libraries are everything. Public schools are very important. I went to public college. If I had to pay for college, I wouldn't have been able to go to college. So, you know, I'm a big supporter of public education and public libraries.
Hey, good luck tomorrow night on Martha's Vineyard. The book, The Case Against Impeaching Trump. Give him hell as usual.
Thank you.
Tom Giordano, weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.